Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson. With me today is Carl Lasker. He is a Yale, what are you? You're a rising 2L?
Yeah, rising 2L.
Okay. A rising 2L at Yale, a LSAT Demon teacher, and just all around good guy. Today, I asked you to come on the show, Carl, and thanks for making the time to do it, because you taught a class on Tuesday called LR Mastery, right? And anyone who takes a class in the Demon, they can leave feedback. They can leave like a 1 to 5 star rating, and then they can comment if they want to. Whenever people do that, we end up getting that feedback so we can try to make all the classes better. And this one came in, and it came in anonymously, but it said, you know, it gave you a five star rating, which is great. But the comment said, Carl's LR class was the best one I've attended on the Demon. So, you know, that's pretty good, Carl. It's the best class ever for this person. He offers lucid explanations for each answer choice of each problem and is loaded with effective strategies. How do you feel so far?
I'm loving what Anonymous has to say.
This is a great podcast episode, right?
It's all about... Yeah, well, I think the context is that I taught with the Demon for a year, and then I took a break for law school. And so when I came back,
yeah,
all the students were new to me, and I could kind of rapid fire through every strategy I had, and it would be like completely new information, right? So I had like this year experience, but then no one knew who I was because I was away for so long. And so it almost felt like a greatest hit show on the... during the class a little bit.
You had all this buildup you wanted to share, and you didn't feel like you're repeating yourself from just the week prior or something.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, it's similar information to what other instructors say, but presented differently. Yeah. And then some things just click with certain people, maybe.
So this review continues. I've been applying one of the LR reading strategies that he oh so nonchalantly dropped in class, and it has not only helped me in LR, but also RC. After implementing that reading approach, I feel so much more confident in tackling LR and RC. Okay, well, you know, to be honest, we get a lot of these sort of positive reviews. Sometimes, of course, we get negative ones, and we want to figure out what happened and try to make the class better. But, you know, this person seemed particularly excited about one of the LR reading strategies that you shared in class. So I was like, hey, I forwarded this to you, and I said, Carl, do you know what specifically you said? And you sent me back 3 possible ideas because you weren't totally sure.
Yeah,
and the first one started
not,
but... Okay, so maybe it's not even one of those, but the first one had to do with Mario, and so I was like, okay, well, maybe we should just share this on the Demon Daily podcast. Do you want to start with that one and what you were trying to say? See if you can like articulate that.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I was trying to say that LR and RC are exactly like Super Mario.
Okay.
And there's no difference. No,
I think you're going to need some evidence for that, but go for it.
Yeah, sure. So I guess this is all contingent on people kind of remembering those old Super Mario games where Mario is kind of running through something and jumping on mushrooms and collecting coins. And then every once in a while, Mario will pass a flagpole. And when Mario jumps past the flagpole, a flag goes up.
Yep.
And then if something happens to Mario further down the road, I forget what can happen to Mario. But if something happens to Mario, Mario doesn't start again at the beginning of the game, and Mario doesn't start again, or Mario doesn't just keep going. Mario returns to that flagpole and then keeps going from there. So kind
I do remember.
Jumps back to the middle.
These are classic 2D games, right? Where you're only running from left to right. That's your only way to win this game. And at the very end of each level, there was that flagpole, and you had to like run up the stairs and then. You were trying to get to the top of that flagpole.
Were you? Okay.
Yeah, because if you got to the top, you got more points. If you jumped up and were halfway up the flagpole, then you didn't get as many points. But then the level would end, right? He would like go into some tunnel, next level. And if you died in that level, you'd respawn. I don't know that they had that word back then, but you'd respawn back at that flag.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's kind of like, I think, LR and RC, because we also read left to right. And
we're okay. moving in that all direction. Right. What else do you do left to right?
But I think what's important is that I think on the LSAT, a lot of students will feel, I think there's a lot of perverse incentives on the LSAT because there's this ticking clock. And so people feel a lot of pressure from the time. Yep. And then I think a lot of students will know that they are going to have to answer a question at the end, right? Yeah. And so a lot of students think, well, if I have this ticking clock and I know I need to get to the question and I can't even collect points in the passage, I think I need to zoom through the passage to read the question and then I'll figure out what's going on in the answer choices. Or I'll kind of reverse engineer once I see the answer choices and work through it, because I know going through five answer choices is already going to take me a lot of time and I have to go through all five. There's just not enough time to go through the passage too. And I think the tricky thing about that is that students are missing the fact that if they engage more with the passage up front, then they'll spend less time in the answer choices. And this is kind of blending a few of my strategies, I'm realizing, as I talk about it. But I think it all is important in that I think what we need to do is read to understand and not skip anything. But that also means that we can't push through the end if we don't understand what we've read before it. And so I think a lot of times we talk at the team about how you should never finish reading a sentence and not know what's going on and then keep reading the next one. You should always know what you've read in the past before starting the next sentence in LR or the next sentence in RC. And so that's where the idea of Mario Kart, or not Mario Kart, Super Mario Brothers comes in, right? I imagine as I'm reading through, I'm reading, I'm understanding, and I'm putting everything into context. And then sometimes I'll reach a point where maybe I zoned out, or maybe I am just, it's too dense and I don't understand what's going on. And then I feel like I'm kind of at a crossroads as a reader where I can keep going and push through to the end and not really understand, or I can kind of return back to the middle of the passage. And so some students will return to the beginning, some students will read all the way through. I think the best way to do it is to kind of read each sentence one at a time, understand, and then when you reach the end of each sentence, treat it as a flag post in Super Mario and a new checkpoint. And so as I'm reading, I'm kind of going, okay, I understand everything up until this period. And then I start the next sentence, right, as one does. And then if I realize I'm not understanding, instead of pushing through, I jump back in the passage to the last point at which I know I understand everything ahead of this, but once I move past this, I got lost, and I keep reading from there until I understand. And so I think it's so important because I'm not saying that if you don't understand something, you have to reread all the things that you already do understand, but I am saying if you find yourself not understanding something, you should go back and reread that section or go back to the point at which you know what comes before and keep reading from there so that you're not jumping into a third and a fourth sentence without knowing what comes in the first and the second sentence. Because, I mean, if you're confused after sentence two, it's only going to get worse by the time you're sentence four. The LSAT's going to drag you all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's kind of what I had in mind when I'm talking about Super Mario Bros.
No, it's, I mean, and if you're really doing it right, then your previous checkpoint should be no more than one sentence away, right?
Yeah, or even one clause. Like for checkpoints, I'm thinking punctuation marks primarily.
Yep. Yeah, it's true. That's commas, semicolons, right? These punctuation marks that the LSAT likes to use. It's like, hey, if you feel like the passage, or I shouldn't even say passage, if you feel like the sentence is getting away from you, then that's fine. Just stop there. There's no one saying, hey, you need to read that entire sentence before you can take stock of it and figure out what it means. Like, you can plant that flagpole halfway through that sentence and be like,
yeah, okay, exactly,
I get it now, and let's go on. So it's almost like you came up with this idea because people were seeing the questions, or are seeing the questions, as rewards, right? Or like that's where the money is, so to speak. And it's like, no, actually the money is all through the passage. You just have to realize that it's there and collect those points as you're going through the passage.
Yeah. And I think I also, like, when I began studying myself for the LSAT way back when it was paper and pencil, if you can believe I did the same thing. And so, because I knew that it would take me a while to go through the five answer choices, no matter how much time I spent on the passage. And this was particularly tricky for me on reading comp because the passages are longer, but I kind of almost knew, like, well, I have this time that I'm going to have to spend on the questions. It's probably going to be the same amount of time no matter what. So maybe I can save time by reducing it in the passage. But again, it's not the same amount of time no matter what. And once I realized that I'd spend less time in the answer choices if I spent more time in the passage, I really got faster because there's five answer choices and some of them are long and there's one passage and the passage is your best friend. So I would much rather slow down to speed up, read the one passage to then save time reading the five answer choices.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. Hey, another thing you mentioned in your email when you responded to me was you said that the beginning of the passage is harder or something like that.
Yeah, I would go a step further as to say, I think that the first sentence you read in every passage is the hardest sentence.
Sure.
And the reason I think that is because before you read the first sentence, you have no idea what you're going to read. You could be reading about helicopters, you could be reading about killer whales, you could be reading about Super Mario running past flagpoles. I mean, it could be anything.
Anything. And often these topics are unfamiliar to people who are reading them, right? For the first time.
Yeah.
It's like some painting technique from the 1700s. It's like no one has ever cared or thought about that before.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes also I feel like I just would sometimes have trouble transitioning. And so I might not even be in the passage when I first start reading the first sentence. Like I may start reading kind of passively and then realize I'm not actually... I'm reading the words, but they're not entering my brain. And I think that's way more likely to happen to me in sentence one than in sentence three when I'm already kind of reading and understanding. And so I would like very often read the first sentence twice. And I think I'd get nervous about that because I'd, again, be like, I have to get to the end of the passage. There's this perverse time pressure on me. And I'm spending so much time in the beginning that I don't even know what the passage is talking about. But what I think I failed to realize is that the first sentence is so difficult because I can't predict what's going to come in the first sentence. I can't put it in context of what comes before. Whereas after each sentence you read, after each Mario checkpoint you pass, you have that much more information to predict what's going to come next. And that much more context to put the next sentence in. And so what I found is that on like RC, first sentence, first paragraph, hardest paragraph. And if I really spent a lot of time in the very beginning, figured out what the topic was and what the argument might be, then by the time I'm reaching the last sentence or by the time I'm reaching even the last paragraph on Reading Comp, a lot of times I already know what the whole thing is going to say. And so I'm making all that time back and more by engaging more at the very beginning when I don't have context, and then I'm allowing that context to help me predict what is going to come down the road. And so I think I say this because a lot of students will, especially on Reading Comp actually, get into like the third or fourth paragraph, and that's when they'll start slowing down and trying to understand because they'll realize they're confused. But then, like we talked about earlier, at this point, like in theory, if you're using the Mario checkpoints, you're never going a sentence or two ahead. At this point, people sometimes are three or four sentences down the line, and so it can be like a little more confusing about where do I jump back to? I don't really understand what's going on. And that's because you're trying to start investing time mid-passage without having built up an understanding of what the passage is actually talking about.
Yeah, it's almost like the Mario checkpoints. You remember, you had to jump to the top to get the most points. And if you ran right from the top of the stairs and, you know, jumped at the right place, you could get to the top of that flagpole. Otherwise, you get to the middle or whatever. And it's almost like the flagpoles earlier on in the passage are taller. And you need to make the effort to like really hit the top of that flagpole. And if you do, and you get it, then all the other flagpoles start to get shorter. If you don't do it, though, they actually start to get taller, I think. Like carry these assumptions right with you where, no, not in the actual game. I'm just saying like.
Oh, in this. Yeah, no, 100%.
We're going.
Too much Mario.
Yeah, too much Mario. But the point is that like you're saying, if you're not investing in that first sentence and in the second sentence and in the first paragraph, then you not only get confused later because you don't have the information that they expect you to have, you're also bringing in all these assumptions. Like when people miss stuff, they start putting in their own assumptions of what they think the author is saying. And it's the kind of assumptions that I don't know how the test writers do this, but they almost seem to anticipate what these people are going to
assume.
And then the questions, you know, like leverage that or pry on that or what is it? I don't know if that's the right.
Yeah, I mean, they take advantage of maybe like the worst thing I think you can feel as a test taker is stress that you're looking at the clock counting down and thinking, oh, I'm still in the third sentence of the passage. because then you're thinking that you need to race much further ahead when, and then it's actually going to take you longer to go through the passage, and then it's going to take you far longer to then like try and solve the question by reading each answer choice and comparing it back to the passage, instead of actually already knowing, having a prediction about what a correct answer is going to look like and then going and identifying it within the five choices.
Yeah. I wanted to share one idea with you that I've been, it's another analogy, a totally different one, but I've been helping my oldest son with the SAT, right? And one thing that he'll do is he'll read a sentence, and I'm telling him this, right? Dude, you got to understand these sentences. It's not about the questions. It's about the passage and understanding each sentence, exactly like what we've been talking about. And he'll read a sentence, and then I'll ask him, like, okay, what is that telling you, and what can you get out of that? And it seems like universally his interpretation of that sentence is, I don't know if accurate's the right word, but it's accurate but incomplete. It's like there are words in the sentence that he's glossing over, not extracting the information from that word that would clue you in a little bit more, right? Like there is one sentence we were looking at, and the author was talking about going to see her friends to console them, right? And when I said, hey, what did that sentence say? He said something like, oh, she's trying to go back home. And there was more in the sentence, but trying to go back home to see her friends. I was like, yeah, okay, that's true. But like, why? And it's like, oh, to console them. And it's like, what can you extract from that word console? And eventually it's like, oh, well, maybe something bad happened, right? But that idea wasn't in his head. And so I'm like, you've got to like grapple with each word and then try to squeeze as much juice out of that word and sentence as you can. Otherwise, you're like leaving these inferences, or I don't know, these clues on the table, right? And you're just moving on into the next sentence.
Yeah. And well, I think one thing that I found on the LSAT too is that one thing they love to do is say something once in a pretty straightforward way and then revisit the same idea later on in a much more complicated phrasing. And so a lot of times maybe they'll say that this person was seeing their friends and consoling them in like sentence one, and then they'll revisit the idea later on, but they will describe it in a way that might not be super obvious that that's what they're talking, where it, you know, it might not be obvious that's what they're talking about later on. And it'll be very obvious to the person who read that they were consoling a friend and mm-hmm. understood that, because they can already kind of predict that that's what we're talking about. But yep. to somebody else, when they add in the more complicated phrasing of the same concept, suddenly you're struggling to understand at the later point when it's not just spelled out for you. And so I think that's, you know, another added danger of not picking up those extra words. I get how it happens, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, also if you recognize like, oh, console, they don't say it in the sentence, but obviously something must have happened. Like you don't go console people just to console them, you know? It's like, so something happened. And then when they talk about that later, you almost see it as two separate events. It's like, okay, we had this person going to see their friends, and then we had this like bad thing that happened, and you're not putting them together. It's like, or you don't even know, like you said, they use convoluted language. So you don't even realize that it's something that's bad that happened, and that it's the thing that probably prompted their friends to need consoling. Right. And it's like, you're just not putting the dots together. Reading is understanding each sentence, but also understanding how they relate to each other. And you can't do that if you don't understand the initial sentence.
No.
Anyways, thanks, Carl. Do you have any last words of advice?
No, I don't think I do. I think everybody's okay. Got all the advice they need from, I mean, anything I trumpet is going to be coming pretty much from you and Nathan. Just revisit. I guess, actually, maybe real quick,
yeah.
I can share one other idea that I had for what that, you know, I forget what they called it. A nonchalantly dropped strategy might have been, that kind of relates to this idea of like predicting what comes next. But I do want to take a second, and I'll only take a second, to talk about like the value of transition words in these passages.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because transition words were my best friend as a reader, particularly however. I love however. And the reason that I love however but really any transition word, furthermore, you know, any of those, is that every time I see that word, I know exactly what's going to come after it. Yeah. Because it's the word is like referencing the sentence that came before it. And yeah. So if I've read and understood a sentence that says maybe like, I am running out of time to pick up groceries this week. Yeah. Or something. I don't know. And then I see a however, I know yeah. that the next sentence is going to just say something to the opposite effect of what I expect if I'm running out of time to pick up groceries. Like, however, maybe I was able to ask a friend to do it. Or however, maybe I have enough groceries. Something that's going to be, you know, the opposite. Sure. And so a lot of times I found on the LSAT, the first sentence will be pretty straightforward. Then they'll drop a transition word and they'll follow it up with a doozy. but what's really nice is that I think if someone's reading intentionally and methodically, they should know what's going to come next. And so they already know the meaning of that very complicated doozy sentence.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot easier to work your way through a sentence that's complicated if you already know what it's trying to tell you. Like, it's like you know the answer, you just don't know how they're going to get to the answer.
Yeah.
And so it's much easier to understand something when you see the answer than it is to understand something when you have no idea what they're trying to tell you. And so the other thing I'd say to people is transition words are your best friends. But, you know, slow down to speed up. You have to make two mistakes and miss a question. All the greatest hits are things that I'd recommend people do. But the best thing people can do is kind of trust the process and, you know, keep studying with the demon.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for coming on. Email daily at LSATdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.